And good morning. Susie is taking another well-deserved day of vacation. Denny Long sitting in once again. Nice to have you joining us on this St. Patrick's Day, this Sunday morning. Well, we thought because March was National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, we thought it appropriate we would invite Dr. Jolene Hubbard, who is a medical oncologist with Allina Health, to join us to shed a little light on this important topic. Dr. Hubbard, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us on this early Sunday morning.
Thank you so much for addressing this really important topic. I'm really happy to be here.
It really is important, and I know that many people may be having breakfast right now, but it is an important topic. And before we even get on the topic, let me invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any questions, maybe it's about you, maybe it's about someone you care about this Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, this issue. Call us or text us. You know the number, 651-461-9226. Dr. Hubbard, we always like to, at the top of this show, always like to find out a little bit more, maybe personally, about our guests. And can you tell us where you grew up and where did you do your medical studies?
Yeah, so I'm actually a native Minnesotan. I grew up in Becker, Minnesota, and did my undergraduate work at Gustavus Adolphus College, and then attended medical school and residency at the University of Minnesota, and then did my hematology and oncology training at the Mayo Clinic. And I was at the Mayo Clinic on staff for about 13 years. And then last summer, moved back to the Twin Cities area and joined the Allina Health Cancer Institute. And I'm based out of Abbott Northwestern Hospital.
Sure, been there a few times myself, as a matter of fact. What exactly does a, we've heard the term oncologist for years. What does a medical oncologist do?
Yeah, so it's different types of oncologists. A medical oncologist is generally the person that you see to talk about diagnosis, prognosis, and we often administer chemotherapy and do surveillance and survivorship after a cancer diagnosis. Other oncologists are radiation oncologists that give radiation therapy. And then surgical oncologists who actually perform the surgeries to remove cancers when possible.
You know, thinking about this particular topic and doing a bit of a reading over the years, too, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've read that colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in the U.S. Am I correct on that?
You are correct. So for men, prostate cancer is number one, and for females, breast cancer is number two. Breast cancer is number one, and then lung cancer comes in number two for both men and women. And then colorectal cancer is number three for both men and women, but when you combine that overall, you're right, it is the second most common causes of cancer death.
I know we'll talk about the screening, different types of screening for colorectal cancer. But another thing we've all been hearing in the news lately is that it's maybe request is not the right word. But for folks under 50, it used to be folks over 50. Let's get that colonoscopy done, which some people avoid. But now we're talking about even under 50.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, the actual mortality from colorectal cancer above the age of 50 has gone down over the past couple decades, and that's due to really good screening techniques such as colonoscopies. But we actually saw for patients or people under 50 that actually the mortality was going up for unclear reasons. So several years ago, they made a decision to actually lower the screening age from 50 to age 45, and that's for the average risk person. And age 45 is when people should begin their colorectal screening if they don't have any other risk factors.
Again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Julian Hubbard, a medical oncologist with Allina, is answering any kind of a question you may have. We're talking about colorectal cancer. This month is the awareness month. We always like to approach this topic every March if we can in our health show. If you'd like to ask the doctor a question, by all means, you can call it in or you can text it in, whichever is easier. And the number is for either 651-461-9226. Doctor, maybe I'm looking at a text question that is an interesting one. Is there a difference between colon and rectal cancer?
Yes, actually, there is a very big difference. You know, the tissue is the same, but how or it's where the cancer occurs. So the rectum obviously is the lowest part of our GI tract, and that can span, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12 centimeters from your bottom. And then the colon is the other 6 feet. And the way that they're treated is very differently, and it has to do with kind of the patterns for recurrence. So generally, when you're diagnosed with a colon cancer, you would go straight to surgery, assuming that there's no spread of the cancer to other parts of the body. But in rectal cancer, we can actually diagnose that and stage that in a little bit different way. Now we are moving towards treating the rectal cancer with chemo and or radiation therapy prior to a surgery. So, yeah, they're treated in a much different way when they are just kind of what we call have localized disease, meaning just located in the colon or rectum.
Thank you for that question. Again, our phone number is the same as the text number, 651-461-9226. Let's get another text here before we take a quick break. Texter said, oh, this is interesting. Why is there an upper age limit on the recommendation of doing colonoscopies? Texter says, my family members tend to live into their upper 90s, even 100.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, you know, it used to be people weren't living that long. And so the guidelines were generally you could stop screening about 10 years prior to kind of an estimate when people were no longer living. Now, as the population is aging and people are living longer, the question is, you know, should we be doing colonoscopies longer in these individuals? And most primary care physicians will sort of individualize that recommendation. And if the patient is otherwise healthy, doing great, no other health conditions that we think would lead to their death in the next 5 to 10 years, then it's reasonable to do a colonoscopy in those patients. The one factor that complicates things is as we get older and get up into the 70s, 80s, 90s, there can be a risk of complications from the colonoscopy itself. It's a fairly low risk of having what we call a perforated colon, but the risk is there as we age. So it's really kind of balancing, you know, an estimate of someone's survival as well as the risk of the procedure itself.
Makes sense. Dr. Hubbard, hang on, please. We'll take a quick break and again invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. Any kind of a question for Dr. Hubbard, either by phone or by text, we welcome yours this Sunday morning. 651-461-9226. Denny Long in for Susie Jones. She'll be back next Sunday. It's going to be a cool week, and we'll have a look at that forecast in detail coming along in a few minutes. I can tell you, on the St. Patrick's Day, maybe some scattered flurries before noon, otherwise partly sunny. 33 and windy today. We dropped to 19 overnight. 25 now here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. 25 degrees in the Twin Cities on this Sunday morning, St. Patrick's Day. We're in the midst of our health hour here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long in for Susie Jones, who shall return next week. This being, for just joining us, by the way, this the month of March, National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, we've invited Dr. Julian Hubbard, who is a medical oncologist with Allina Health, to answer some questions this morning. And Dr. Hubbard, again, thanks for joining us this morning. We have plenty of questions. Obviously, a big topic in a lot of people's minds as well. It should be. If you do have a question for us, call it in or text it in, whichever is easier, 651-461-9226. As far as colorectal cancer, Dr. Hubbard, who exactly would you say is at risk for this type of cancer?
Yeah, so we know that there are some inherited forms of colon cancer that run in families. There are syndromes called Lynch syndrome or familial adenomatous polyposis, we call FAP for short. And these are just two of the syndromes that we know run in families. And for those patients that have those syndromes, they can develop colorectal cancer at a fairly young age, sometimes in the teens or 20s or 30s. Other people that are at risk are patients that have inflammatory bowel disease, such as ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And then people who have had a history of radiation therapy to their abdomen are at increased risk as well. And then we have people that have colon cancer in their family. Maybe they don't have the inherited syndrome, but they have a first-degree relative with colon cancer, so parents, siblings, children. Those people are at increased risk as well. And we know all of these people with increased risk should begin their screening earlier than the current recommendations of 45.
Dr. Hubbard, I'm looking at a couple of texts. They're obviously related to what you're just mentioning. The first text said, is there a genetic link with colorectal cancer? And the other, as you addressed, at what age should people get tested with family history of colon cancer?
Yeah, so for the first question, yeah, we just talked about a couple of syndromes that are inherited and run in families. The reality is there are probably some other syndromes we just haven't diagnosed yet, because we know that people who have first-degree relatives are at increased risk. So for those families with a first-degree relative, we recommend that patients or that family members begin their screening about 10 years prior to the diagnosis of that first-degree relative. So, for instance, if your sister was diagnosed with colon cancer at age 48, your screening should begin at a minimum at age 38.
Okay, very good.
If it's older than that, say the cancer is at 58, then we say, you know, your screening should start at age 40 at a minimum.
I'm looking at a text. It's a rather long one, so maybe I can condense it a little bit. It doesn't say male or female, but this person had a colonoscopy to make sure. They've evidently had other testing, like CAT scans is what they said, for Crohn's disease. So if someone gets a colonoscopy, you can discover other issues, can you not, besides colon cancer?
That is correct, yes. So things like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease can be diagnosed on colonoscopy. There can be other polyps that can be diagnosed that are not cancerous or they are precancerous. This is one of the benefits of colonoscopy, is that we can catch things at a precancerous level before they turn into a full-blown cancer.
That is colonoscopy. They still, I believe, call it the real deal here. That's where you can really find out what's going on. Now, are there other techniques, other screening options?
Yes. So colonoscopy, you're right, remains the gold standard because we can pick up precancerous polyps before they become a cancer. But there are a couple of other methods. So one of them is what we call a FIT test, a fecal immunohistochemical test. So this is a test that is done on a patient's stool, and it looks for any DNA fragments that may identify that a patient has a colon cancer. they're not as good at identifying precancerous lesions, but they are pretty good at diagnosing cancerous lesions. And depending on what type of stool test that you do, the FIT test is done yearly. People have probably heard about Cologuard, which is another test done on a patient's stool. That's recommended to be done every 3 years. There's also just this week in the New England Journal a test that came out about a blood test looking for colon cancer, and that's not available for patients yet, but it has a pretty high sensitivity to be able to detect colon cancer at an early stage. The downside is it's not able to detect the precancerous lesions that we can detect with colonoscopy. And therefore, colonoscopy really remains the gold standard. There are a lot of patients that are hesitant to do a colonoscopy for various reasons. They don't like the prep. They don't like the thought of, you know, a camera in that area, which is understandable. So for those patients that don't want to do the colonoscopy, the second best would be a test on the stool.
How accurate, if we know any figures on the stool test, are they pretty accurate?
Yeah, they're pretty accurate in the, 60 to 70% range of picking up colorectal cancers. If you do it over multiple years, the sensitivity increases. But again, those are, they can pick up actual cancers pretty well, but not the precancerous lesions. The sensitivity for that is pretty low.
All right. Hang on, doctor, please. Dr. Jolene Hubbard is our guest this morning. She is a medical oncologist with Allina Health here in the Twin Cities. Talking about colorectal cancer. Why are we talking about that? Well, March happens to be National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. We welcome your phone calls and text messages, your questions for Dr. Hubbard at 651-461-9226. We'll get to the weather forecast coming along in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It's a Sunday morning here on 830 WCCO. We're in the midst of our health hour. Denny Long in for Susie Jones, who shall return next week. We've invited Dr. Jolene Hubbard, who is a medical oncologist with Allina Health here in the Twin Cities, to talk about National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month and the process, the disease itself, and any questions you may have related to colorectal cancer. Call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Interesting topic this morning, doctor. A lot of interest from our listeners, a lot of questions. I have a couple of my own, but I want to get to our listeners first. This listener says, 3 years in a row, I had my colonoscopy every year, but I was told to repeat in 3 years. Why do you think the change?
Yeah, so sometimes people will have polyps removed that have evidence of what we call dysplasia. And that means that the cancer or the cells are looking a little bit abnormal and may have a tendency to turn into a colon cancer. So in those patients, we would recommend that they get their colonoscopy sooner than the every recommended 10 years. And so 3 years would be a recommendation for someone who has what we call a high-risk polyp that needs to be followed up on and make sure no other high-risk polyps develop that might turn into a cancer in the future.
You mentioned that word polyp. I'm looking at a text simply says, what exactly is a polyp?
Yeah, so a polyp is just like a little outpouching in the colon itself. Think of like a bud on a tree before, the leaves come out. It looks like a little bud popping up, and that's called a polyp. And, lots of people will have polyps, and the majority of these polyps will be benign. But that's one thing that colonoscopy will do is remove these polyps, and the pathologist will then review them, look for any signs of any precancerous or cancerous lesion. And so that's one of the really good benefits of colonoscopy is to be able to detect those polyps really early.
I've talked to many people over the years doing this health show, and as far as colonoscopies go, and we always hear about the preparation being the worst, but I don't hear as many complaints about it, of course, especially after after patients have had the procedure. They go, that's not so bad. The preparation, yeah, it was a bother, but it seems to have died down a little bit. I'm not sure if I'm talking to different people or what. Has the preparation changed, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, the preparation has changed. It's and for some people, what's recommended is that they do like a clear liquid diet for a couple days or a day prior to actually taking the prep. The prep isn't quite so onerous. Not everybody has to drink that gallon jug of what we call Go Lightly to help clean out the colon. So the prep has definitely improved. And then I think the colonoscopy itself and the way that we give sedation prior to the colonoscopy, so people are relaxed, often fall asleep during the procedure, I think we're doing a better job with that. So overall, the procedure itself is better tolerated as well.
You know, maybe we could back up just a little bit and address maybe the signs of colon cancer. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, so that is an excellent question, and that's what I, you know, I talk to primary care providers and people in the community about, really getting the word out about the symptoms of colon cancer. So they can be fairly vague, such as things like abdominal pain that just isn't going away, a change in your bowel habits. Maybe you're becoming a bit more constipated than normal, and noticing discomfort prior to a bowel movement. Bleeding from the rectum is a very common sign of rectal cancer. And it's surprising to me how long, you know, people may assume, oh, I just got a hemorrhoid, and they may have, you know, 6 to 12 months of bleeding for the rectum before they come in for an evaluation. Sometimes people don't have symptoms and they come in for routine blood work and their doctor may find they are a bit anemic, meaning they have a low hemoglobin. And sometimes that can be a sign that there was some hidden or occult blood loss in the stool that's gone unnoticed for some time. And if that's, you know, if that's the case, if doctor finds you have an anemia, no other reason to have that, a colonoscopy would be indicated just to look for a colon cancer.
And if our listeners are hearing you mention these symptoms, what should their first step be? Talk to their primary care person?
Yes, definitely. So any, you know, new worsening abdominal pain, pain with bowel movements, rectal pain, rectal bleeding, yes, definitely contact your primary care provider and get scheduled for an evaluation. And those are the people then that would refer you for a colonoscopy.
Right. I'm looking at another text from a listener, Doctor. This one says, I've had multiple breast biopsies, including two excisional. I've been found to have a radial scar. In reading various research articles, it seems excision is recommended due to cancer cells being missed. Any thoughts, they want to know, on your part?
This is regarding breast cancer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They've had multiple breast biopsies.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would, you know, potentially get a referral to a breast cancer surgeon that could potentially, you know, do what we call an excisional biopsy and remove that area. I think with multiple biopsies, we do get nervous that some cancer cells could be left behind. That's correct.
Your question for Dr. Jolene Hubbard this morning at 651-461-9226. A listener says, would a colonoscopy recommended to an 80-plus active, vital, healthy-appearing person who is on a blood thinner and blood pressure medication with no previous hospitalizations or serious illnesses? So I guess they want to address maybe the blood thinner, blood pressure meds for a colonoscopy.
Yeah. So I think, you know, with the blood pressure med, that shouldn't be a contraindication to screening. And the blood thinner, so depending on why the patient is on the blood thinner, sometimes that can be stopped beforehand, but that also is not an absolute contraindication to getting a colonoscopy. It's just that if any procedures need to be done, like a polyp removal generally can be done while patient is on a blood thinner, but anything more invasive than that, they would need to stop the procedure and then recommend the patient stop the blood thinner and then go back and do the procedure. So I think if that patient's otherwise healthy, they could possibly get a colonoscopy.
Kind of a two-part question, Dr. Hubbard. This listener says, my last two colonoscopies had to be aborted even after trying a pediatric scope due to severe diverticulitis. They did an MRI or a scan of some type using dye instead. No polyps found. Question one, why do I have to go through trying the colonoscopy first? And what would be the next step if polyps were found?
Yeah, so again, the imaging study, and this may have been what we call a barium dye study, where people swallow a dye and then it's the colon is imaged as the dye is going through. You know, that is not as sensitive as a colonoscopy. And then, you know, if a polyp were found, a patient would still have to go through a procedure. And if they're not able to reach the polyp with the pediatric scope, then sometimes, you know, if the polyp is big enough, that may require an actual colon surgery.
So the polyp question, I am lucky, I'm a lucky one, Texter says, to have a colonoscopy every 3 to 5 years due to polyps, et cetera. What are things that I can do to prevent polyps? Is there a way to do that?
You know, not that we're aware of at this time. You know, if we think about just the general risks for colon cancer in the general population, we know that people that have a diet higher in fruits and vegetables have a lower risk for colon cancer. People that eat lower amounts of red meats and processed meats have a lower risk. And people that are, you know, up and active and exercising with a goal of 150 minutes of aerobic activity a week, that decreases the risk for colon cancer. Now, does that decrease the risk for polyps? We're not sure, but I think those are several lifestyle modifications that we can do to try to prevent colon cancer.
You've just answered another listener question. Does diet play a role in colorectal cancer, and how about exercise? So you've covered those two topics. This listener, I know we have to take a quick break here in a moment, but could you please define, listener says, the first degree relatives. What are first degree relatives?
Yeah, so first degree relatives are their parents, your siblings, so brothers and sisters, or your children. So that's what we call first-degree relatives, as opposed to second-degree relatives, which may be aunts and uncles, cousins, etc. So really those closest in your immediate family would be the first-degree relatives.
All right, I tell you what, let's do take this quick break. We'll be back. We have remaining minutes of our show this morning. We still have time for your questions. We'll grab some more text questions here this morning on St. Patrick's Day. If you're just joining us, Dr. Jolene Hubbard, medical oncologist with Alina Health, is answering those questions this morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. 25 degrees on this Sunday morning, St. Patrick's Day. We're in the midst of our health hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Denny Long in for Susie, who shall return next Sunday morning. We're having a chat with Dr. Jolene Hubbard, who's a medical oncologist with Alina Health here in the Twin Cities. We've invited Dr. Hubbard in because March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. We're getting a bunch of questions from our listeners, Doctor, this morning. Let's see how many folks we can help out before you take your leave. Here's another one. This is interesting. How are polyps actually removed during a colonoscopy?
Yeah, so during the colonoscopy, at the end of the scope that discovers the polyp, there are small little tools that they just go in with kind of these little wires that will kind of cut off the polyp at the very base of the polyp, so as close to the colon wall as they can get. They will kind of snip that little polyp off and then bring that out and have it reviewed under the microscope by a pathologist for any signs of precancerous or cancerous cells.
A listener, another good question, I think, for folks that have not had a colonoscopy done. A listener wants basically to describe what the whole procedure, the whole preparation, the whole nine yards, as we say.
Okay. So, yeah, in general, it starts with what we talked about already, the prep for the procedure, which is basically you usually are prescribed this powder that you mix with liquid, and then you drink that, and then that helps clean out the colon. And it's very important to complete all of the prep so the colon is cleaned out as much as possible, because this is the best way then for the polyps to be detected during the procedure. So then you come into an outpatient clinic for the actual procedure. Basically, right before the procedure, they give you some nice medications to help you be relaxed and, like I said, take a little bit of a nap. A very long tube with a camera at the end of it basically is inserted into the rectum and then up through the, all 6 feet of the colon. So as they advance the colon all the way to the very beginning of the, or they advance the camera all the way to the beginning of the colon, and then on their way back, they're looking for, they're looking very closely at the entire colon wall to look for any polyps or other abnormalities that they see. And then those are typically biopsied with that little snipping procedure we just mentioned. And then afterwards, the camera is removed. You wake up from your nap and you can go about your day. Usually you do need to have someone with you that can drive you to and from the procedure because you have had sedation. And I tell patients, you know, it typically takes about a half a day to, you know, actually get there and do the procedure and recover from the procedure.
I know it can vary from patient to patient, but generally speaking, how long does the actual procedure itself take, roughly?
Yeah, it's not actually all that long. If you have, you know, a pretty normal colon that's well cleaned out and easy to get through, you know, it can be, you know, anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes. If you've had like prior surgeries and maybe the colon is a little bit harder to maneuver through with the camera, then it could be a little longer.
Okay. Another age question. This listener says, coming from Iowa, we appreciate you listening. I'm 77 years old, just had a colonoscopy, all okay. My doctor said it would be my last exam. That age question again. Do you agree at my age I've had enough enough colonoscopies?
Well, we think probably that's probably your last colonoscopy. Now, if you get to 87 and you're feeling absolutely wonderful and it looks like you got another 10 years ahead of you, you know, then it might be something that your doctor would consider doing. But again, as we talked about earlier in the hour, there is an increased risk of a complication as we get older. So sometimes the very low likelihood of developing a colon cancer at that age doesn't warrant the risk of the procedure itself. So it's really an individualized decision with you and your doctor.
Just a couple of minutes to go on the show. It's gone by rather quickly. And we appreciate your getting with us, joining us this morning. Maybe one more question. This listener is not able to have a colonoscopy or colonography because of a big kink in their colon. They did use the Cologuard test. Are there any tests, any other tests, if the Cologuard shows a concern in that particular case?
Yeah, so there are a couple of other tests not used very commonly. One is called a CT colonography, where basically people swallow kind of a specialized camera that then can try to look for any polyps as it's or abnormalities as it's moving through the colon. So that might be another option for the patient that can't undergo a colonoscopy.
Sure, makes sense. Dr. Hubbard, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. I know I apologize we didn't get to all the questions. I appreciate listeners joining in on the conversation. We'd love to have you back sometime with again, certainly next year, but maybe even before that on this most important topic. But thanks again, Dr. Hubbard.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Jolene Hubbard, again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Hubbard is a medical oncologist with Allina Health in the Twin Cities. Just a reminder, coming along next hour, as usual, Bruce and Peg will be with us here on 830 WCCO from Wealth Enhancement Group, another edition of Your Money. So get those financial questions ready for Bruce and Peg next hour. In the meantime, on this St. Patrick's Day, we could see, believe it or not, a few scattered flurries before noon today. Otherwise, partly sunny skies near 33, the daytime high. Let's see, right now we have a northwest wind gusting to 36 miles an hour. Overcast skies, 25 degrees in the Twin Cities. Stay with us.